Okay, we'll get started. It's always great to have a good mix of people. I'd like to, and we have a lot of new people, so I'd like to just give a brief introduction of who we are and what HMTRI is and a little bit about the brownfields and what we're going to be doing. We do these 30-minute conference calls every other week. We've been on summer break because we had a lot of conferences going on, which I'll talk about in a second. We started with about three or four, and then we took a break, and we're starting up again. Someone just joined.
This is Angela from Pathstone. How are you?
Okay, great, great, Angela. I'm just giving a little introduction of what we're doing and what we're trying to accomplish. We're starting up again, and this is a good time to start up because there will be some new RFPs, requests for proposals, coming out shortly, and we're going to talk about that. But just briefly, what HMTRI, it's Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute, if you go to the Brownfields page, and we'll talk a little bit about that later and how to get there, you'll see a bunch of different grant programs. And one of the, of course, the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program is one of them, as well as the assessment and loan and revolving loan pilots. But if you look at the list of types of grants, there is one that says technical assistance and research grants. And HMTRI is funded under that program. And the purpose of HMTRI is to provide technical assistance to communities, to grantees and communities that may be thinking of starting a environmental workforce development job training program, whether it's for you or not for you. And for those who have grants, we try to do some peer-to-peer mentoring and try to exchange some ideas. And we do this in a lot of different ways. We have an annual grantee meeting, which we'll be talking about often. That usually occurs in August, and our next one will be in August next year. And all PLC members are also invited to that, where we get together all the EPA people, the regional coordinators, other agencies in EPA, and we sit down, and it's a little one-on-one boot camp that we have in Alexandria. We also have a listserv, and we do surveys throughout the year. But one of the things that we're doing and doing today and we'll be doing for the next seven or eight sessions will be these cycles of 30-minute phone calls. We try to keep them short so it doesn't take too much time of your day. We're not EPA. We don't speak for EPA, but we do provide kind of a third-party slant on things. We get together and we talk about what's happening in Washington, what the news is, and we coach along. The nice thing about being a grantee is we can give our viewpoint, and it is just our viewpoint, and we'll, in coming weeks, we'll have grantees that'll talk about their program, their success stories, what worked for them, what didn't, and kind of guide you through setting up a job training program. And coincidentally, and we've been doing this since the beginning of this program, 12 or 13 years ago, we've developed technician training, and so we're fairly well experienced in job training, but always learning something new from the grantees. So we like to, in coming sessions, we'll have grantees talk about things that they made that were mistakes they made and things that really worked well for them. We'll also probably have some EPA people on the line that'll talk about things that are happening in EPA. We try to keep this among ourselves to talk about problems we're having, and so it doesn't reflect on anyone. We don't necessarily have EPA people. We're welcome. They're welcome, but we try to talk among ourselves about our problems and things that and solutions to our problems. Everyone who signed up will get post-session notes, and you've probably gotten one or two or three reminders. We usually remind people of our meetings. Our next one will be October 21st, which is 2 weeks. They're always the same time every other week, so it's on a Wednesday. So, again, 21st. Today we're going to talk about three things. And today we'll be mostly talking about what's coming up, and in future sessions we'll have some of the grantees talking, and we'll have some open discussion also. We do try to keep lines open, so if you have a question as we go along, just come on into the discussion. The three things we want to talk about today is, one, I just want to give a recap of what happened since our last PLC meeting, which is back in August. A lot of things were going on all the meetings in environmental workforce and brownfield kind of clumped up in August and early September. We had our all grantee meeting, which we usually always have in August, where we get all the grantees and PLC members together. That was in mid-August. And then we had Brownfields, the national conference in Chicago, in the beginning of September. And that's a much bigger conference. That occurs every 18 months. It won't occur again until 2017, probably in spring of 2017. Our next PLC, our next annual grantee meeting will be next August. But the what we do at the and those are the two things I want to quickly discuss. And then I want to get into what's coming up, and it'll be the new RFP that EPA will be issuing for the next round of grants. We always like to start out with news from Washington and what's happening. And just to give you a quick, those of you who are grantees and old PLC members, we're all rooting for Glo Hanna, that works with our program. She's tending to her husband. Her husband's got a severe form of cancer, but he's been operated on. Bruce, you'd say she's doing pretty well, or her husband?
They're both holding up pretty well. He's had several procedures, but the doctors say he's looking good and recovering well.
Good, good. It was an intestinal type of cancer, and he's undergoing quite a few procedures. And Glo has decided to be the caregiver, and she's been working with him. So she's taken kind of a leave of absence, but she's coming probably in a few weeks. She'll be coming back half days, do you think, Bruce?
More than likely. We're looking for her maybe mid to late October.
Mm-hmm. And she'll be coming back. And we'll be all hearing from her again. So she's, meanwhile, she's following what we're doing, and we all give her our best, and her husband our best wishes. So, in other news in Washington, Joe Bruss has decided to do a little change of scenery, and Joe has been our project officer and the project officer for the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program for about 10 years. He decided to move out to Oregon. And so he's leaving Washington. He's on detail. He moved October 1st. Anyone that tries to get a hold of him will get a message that he's on leave right now. He's going to relocate in Oregon on detail to Region 10. And Rachel is kind of covering his duties in Washington. We're not sure yet if he's going to stay with environmental workforce training or move into environmental justice, which he's quite interested in. But he's looking at a different type of experience. So it could be that in Washington, at least, as far as the job training, we may be working with Rachel or additional people in Washington. What's important, though, to the communities, to any of you who are thinking of applying for a grant or have grants, the regional representatives are your first line of contact, not necessarily Joe. He works on the national program. But your regional reps are your first contacts, and they are the ones that you're going to be working with and want to work with. I'm going to be, and the first question is, well, who is that contact? And I'm going to be putting in the notes that you'll get in the next couple of days the best way to find your contact, your regional coordinator. If you have a question, you could email me, and I could give you their contact information. And one of the things I'm not sure, if you didn't get a notice or multiple notices about our meetings, just drop me your contact information. If you got a notice, you're on our listservs, so you don't have to do anything. But if you're on this call and you know someone who wants to be on this call and get our post-session notes, or if for some reason you don't get post-session notes, drop a line to msenyu@aol.com. M as in Michael, S as in Sam, ENEW@AOL.com. And you'll get plenty of notices about our meetings every other week, and you'll get some post-session notes. And in those session notes, we put all of our websites, meetings coming up, any grant opportunities that we're aware of, things that you should know that perhaps we may not get a chance to discuss in the conference call. But in that in those notes, I'll put some interesting websites I think you need to go to, particularly if you're thinking of setting up a program. And the first one, of course, will be the Brownfield site. It'll lead you to a lot of other sites. And in that general Brownfield site, it's got all the regional contacts. And you'll want to find your regional coordinator. There's a regional job training coordinator in every region. Each region, there's 10 regions, about 5 states in each region, clumped geographically around the country. And you'll want to find your regional coordinator. If you have a grant, you want to keep in touch with that regional coordinator. And we encourage people just to call them up or email them and say, hey, we're doing fine and just wanted to touch base with you, because they like to hear from their coordinators. We have about 30 active grants going at any one time, 30 to 40 grants, and that's dispersed among 10 regions. So they may have 3 to 5 grantees in their region, and they like to see if they could help them, keep them informed of what's going on, just keep in touch with them. So you could either email me for your contact information of your regional coordinator, or you could go to this website that I'll give you in the notes, and you could find them and call them. If you're thinking of, if you've got a grant now and you haven't talked to your coordinator, it's probably a good thing just to touch base with them and say, we've been on the PLC and we just wanted to touch base with you. Things are going well. Our next class is on such and such a date, and this is what we're doing. Just to keep in touch. If you are thinking of starting a program, I strongly encourage you to get in touch with the regional coordinator just to let them know that we're planning on submitting a grant. We're thinking about submitting a grant. There's no obligation, just to let them know. They might say, well, gee, that's a good idea, and maybe I would suggest you contact these certain people in your state that they're actively looking at the same thing, or some helpful hints. So it's really a good idea to call them. They're kind of our friends, and they're not in Washington. They're in the region, in the regional offices, but they're going to be tracking your grant and working with you, and they can help you a lot if you're thinking of starting one. And if you come along this path and you decide we're not ready this year, that's okay too. Often regional coordinators might work with a community for a year or two or three until it's time for them to submit a grant, and they'll kind of nurture them along. We work a lot with the regional coordinators, and they might suggest different communities that we want to make sure that they're on the PLC, or they're on our listserv to make sure they're getting as much information as they can. The Brownfields website that I'm going to give you will, in the notes, will tell you all about Brownfields and the types of grants that are given. The Brownfields, a job training program, comes out of an office in EPA, Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, and they work with all the different types of Brownfields programs. And of course, one is the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training. The others have to do with the cleanup of the programs, but they're all coordinated through that office. And as part of those websites that I'm going to provide you, we'll also give you a listing of every job training program that has ever been granted. And you can go to your community or your state and find out who's got an active grant in your program in your community, or who had one at one time. And it goes all the way back to the beginning of the program. So if you're thinking of starting a program, you would go to this site, and it's real easy to use, and you could find out exactly, oh, yes, there was another community in your city, and you may want to contact them, or there was another community in your city, and they had one for a few years, and then they discontinued, or they don't get funding anymore. Many of our programs get started. As I said, at any one time, there's about 17 grants awarded each year. It used to be about 15. It's moved up, but it depends on federal funding, but 17 each year, and each grant lasts for 3 years. So you're talking about 40 to 50 active grants that are receiving federal funding. There are many other grants, though, or communities who got started, and they've received funding from other sources, whether it's the state, Department of Labor, Department of Justice, or they've got some other program that they've merged into, and they either don't need federal funding or they resubmitted a grant and it wasn't accepted for refunding, and they may be resubmitting. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Each year, the nice thing about this program is it's an annual competition. This year, news is that, as we know it now, is the last thing that Joe said was it could be late October, but most likely November. He doesn't really even know exactly when it goes out. They develop all the criteria for it. Basically, the important part of it is the ranking criteria, which evaluates your grant. And then they submit that through various vetting processes in EPA. So a lot of eyes look at this before it goes out. So while they may, in their minds, know exactly what they're going to have in the RFP, it hasn't gone through all the vetting process in EPA, so it takes a while. And they usually give us a range. It'll be October, November, but all of a sudden we'll get news that it's out today, and we'll let all of you know when it is out. When the RFP goes out, is usually about 90 days to develop your proposal, which we'll be talking about. It really takes a lot more than 90 days to do an adequate proposal and do all your background work. That's why we're starting now. So that puts us around January to the January-February timeframe when they'll be due. And every year it comes out about this time, and unfortunately it happens right over Christmas holidays and New Year's. So you really want to get a lot of work done before the holidays start, because when you get into November and December, meetings start to slow down and turn into Christmas parties, and people take a lot of time off. So it's really good to get started early. These grants will be due in that January-February timeframe. And then they'll be awarded. They start weeding them out. Those people who don't qualify, in about 15 days, they get taken out, and then the rest of them go to this judging process. We call it the ranking criteria, where they're evaluated, and that takes a couple of months. So in April or May, it could drag into June. The grants will be announced, and they'll go to the announcements are made to the congressman and to the fiscal agent, and then the people involved will hear about it. So we're talking about next spring, summer, and then everyone will have received their grant. And then in August, we'll be having our all-grantee meeting, where we'll all get together and start talking about what we're doing, and it gives people a chance to revise their work plans if they need to, and work with their regional coordinators. And then usually the training starts in the fall of next year. So here we are. We're sitting about a year away from when we'll actually be working with students in the classroom. And it is a long process, but it, once you get started, it works well for those grantees that have gotten grants. I think most of them find it's a very rewarding experience. The way the grants work also is there's, as I said, depending on the funding, there's about $3 million that they get for this program. It used to be $2 million. It's been increased to $3 million. They brought in other offices like pesticides and water, some of the other offices, chemical awareness. And so they've increased their funding to $3 million. Hopefully that'll stand this year. That allows $200,000 grants, about 15 to 17 grants, depending again on the exact funding they get. There's no fixed formula, but we've observed, if we look over the last several years, that about half of them are re-ups. I call it re-ups, that those people who have completed their old grants, who have been funded in the past, and are going in for, I call it a re-up, for the next 3 years. About half of them, about eight or so, will be refunded. And then the other eight will be new grantees that we'll be submitting. So if you're thinking of starting a program this year, you're talking about eight to 10 new grantees will be funded. And to give you a perspective of how many apply total, maybe about 50 apply. Some of those, of course, have not done their homework, and they're knocked out pretty quickly. There are a lot of people who just, when they see a grant, they apply for it. But then you get down to the actual evaluation, and it's pretty tough. And so over the next several months here, we're going to be talking very specifically addressing those activities that it takes to develop a job training program, what it takes, and how to address those programs. And as we get closer, we'll be talking about some tips in terms of the grants. These conference calls are not a pre-grant or a grant preparation activity. They're more just to share information, but we do, the way the EPA job training program is set up is their ranking criteria that they judge you on. If you write a grant that will be accepted, there's a really good chance you know exactly what you're doing, and if you just follow this roadmap and your work plan, you're going to have a successful program. So they're very, because they've got such limited funds, they are pretty much certain that the people that get the grants are going to do a good job and have addressed all of the nuances of job training. And we'll be talking about those things, like doing a proper assessment and a good recruitment plan, and of course your curriculum and your student retention services and your job placement services and your job follow-up programs. And so we'll be addressing all those very specifically in future calls. What can you do right now? And this being the first call, I'm going to give everyone some homework that they can start to look at between now and the next call. And I'll be, as I said, in 2 days, I'll be getting this post-session notes with some websites that I think could be interesting for you to look at. That'll give you basically a really good background in terms of what's out there, some fact sheets about other grants that have been awarded. There's one called, I call it Grants 101. It's all about understanding, managing, and applying for an EPA grant. And it'll give you a lot of detail on what's involved in setting up a grant. And for new communities, if you're just starting and you're saying, we're thinking of starting one of these programs, next time we're going to be talking about partnering, which is really going to be the most important thing. And at this point in time, whether you're an existing grant, and one of the things that ties into what I just said about eight re-ups, if you are looking to re-up your grant, the criteria have gotten pretty strict. And we've, unfortunately, and what really makes me sad, is when you've had a good grantee and they don't make the cut and they don't get refunded. And I'm thinking, oh, they should have been refunded. They really should have. And 9 out of 10 times it's, they may have relied on their good work that they've done, and they haven't specifically addressed all these very competitive issues as others may have. So even if you've had a grant, you really have to start fine-tuning and very much elaborating and getting ready for this new program in terms of setting, re-looking at your partnerships. What types of people are you going to be bringing on? If you're a new community right now, I would strongly start thinking in global terms in your city. Go to those websites and find out who's doing training in your community. Do you have an old Job Corps program? Do you have a youth build program in your community, or a groundworks program, or one of the old CETA programs for those of you who are associated with the workforce investment boards? Any kind of service corps do you have a Goodwill program that might be doing job training, or even a Salvation Army program, some sort of a construction program? And the reason I say that, when we're first starting to look at starting a program in our community, or even if you have one, signing up with someone who's already doing training, and you're going to see in later calls how important it is to link up with someone that is doing job training, because when you get into addressing these ranking criteria, they're going to be asking, what kind of training have you done, experience, have you done anything with the federal government before? And if you link up, or if you're an organization that has done this before, you're going to have a really good advantage over anyone else. And if you're thinking of starting a program in your community, it doesn't mean you're going to be knocked out of this. It's very difficult to start one of these programs from scratch, but it's very easy to take one of these programs and link it onto an existing program. In other words, find a program that's already going in your community and approach them and suggest you'd like to start this environmental component, and would they like to work with you on this? And what you're doing is you're going to partner with them, and we'll show you later how you incorporate this into the grant. But it's going to save you an enormous amount of time and effort, because it's like a moving train. They're already going at 60 miles an hour, and you're just going to jump on that train, and you're going to ride with them, and you're going to be able to take care, accept and bring into your grant all of their background experience, their fiscal agents, all their grant writing experience, their accountants, their financial people, their facilities, their trainers, their partners who are already vetted or on board. And what you're going to do is just add on to that, and you're going to add an environmental component, an environmental job training component, and it's going to be so much easier. In contrast to someone over here who's got no program and has to assemble all of these things and may not have the experience that your competitors have. So the word of advice probably in this very first session of looking forward to starting one of these programs is start looking in your community for the kind of things we'll suggest, some of these types of organizations. See if there's one in your community and you want to make contact with them, and just indicate to them that you're thinking of starting a job training program. And it may be a WIB. We've got lots of WIBs who are excellent partners. We've got lots of old Job Corps, CETA programs, Department of Labor programs, Youth Bill programs. We've got a Goodwill program. If you get into those programs, and we'll talk about how you could use their resources, and we find that they're very much interested in adding an environmental component because it broadens their experience, and it's going to help you later. In terms of sustainability, you could keep getting EPA funding, but then again, at the same time, if for some reason you miss a year and don't get it, you'll be able to be sustained by this larger organization. So we're going to be talking about these things in the future. And I apologize for just being a talking head today. There may be a few of these that we'll be talking a lot about this process and getting things started, but we do want to share experience with some of the grantees. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say, or observations or questions or things that they would like to look at in the coming weeks? Not there.
I have a statement. I've been typing notes, information for me as a new grantee. This is Marissa from TCC Northwest Campus in Fort Worth. So I was typing notes to myself, you know, as you were speaking, but I didn't capture everything. If I understand correctly, there will be notes available from this meeting?
Absolutely. Now,
okay.
If you got a notice from me, msenu@aol.com, you'll get the post-session notes. We have two listservs. We have a general one that's got a lot of people involved in brownfields, and that's a listserv that Bruce sends out. And then we have one just for the PLC. We have about 300 people that are on the PLC list, and those are people who are specifically familiar. They've been to a PLC or requested to be on this professional learning community, and we send them also reminders and post-session notes. So
okay.
if you did not get one for msenyu@aol.com, send me your contact information. I'll make sure you're on that list.
Okay, and my apologies. I'm re-looking at the update for the conference call, and I didn't read all the way at the bottom. I see where your email address is, so I'll
msenyu@aol.com. Yeah.
Okay.
And that way, if you're on my list, the PLC list, it's smaller than the big listserv. And for those of you who are on both lists, you're probably getting lots of reminders, maybe more than you want to get. But we do want to try to get everyone who may be interested specifically in setting up one of these programs, or if they have a program, to make sure that they get these notes and reminders.
Okay.
Thanks for the comment. Well, I know that's a lot
to
digest.
I have a question.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is Angela from North Star Center for Human Development. In the all grantees meeting, there was some mention of some of the curriculum, the reading materials. Some people were starting to use tablets and having electronic access to some of the EPA curriculum. Right now, we're running into our sole supplier being out of stock on some of the items. And I was just wondering, while we have some current grantees gathered, are there any alternative sources for materials, either by hard copy book or electronic, that are not going against copyright laws?
Okay.
If anyone could.
Okay. Anyone on the call? If they have some suggestions. Is there anyone on the call that has a suggestion they might make right now?
Right now we're using ehsmaterials.com for the printed materials. And if anyone has a source for another vendor, I would really love to have it.
I'm going to also put in notes of Florida. Our people in Florida, they use tablets. And are you thinking of going to tablets now at this point? Or are you on tablets? We have some grantees that are experimenting and starting using tablets instead of printed materials. And I'll put in the notes our contact in Florida. They use tablets exclusively. And they have curriculum. And they may very well share with you that curriculum. So we'll put that contact that you could contact them to talk about that. Certainly you might start looking at, I'm also going to put a note to the NIEHS, and we didn't get to talk about that, the National Environmental Health Program. They have health and safety training, and there's lots of curriculum that they have available. Put that link to the NIHS website. It's it has a lot of sources of curriculum. Certainly, any of the PDFs that EPA has, and often the people who are using a lot of those materials are bringing it out of EPA available materials. But I'll put you in contact with those, and anyone else who may have suggestions, if you email me with those suggestions, I'll pass those on. But it is interesting. We're finding, and we'll talk about tablets at another date, but we've had some grantees. It first started in Florida, where they went to the regional office and said, rather than spending $500 or $600 on books, we're going to buy tablets. And they first worked with they found that the Nooks at that time were the best because you didn't have to leave your credit card and sign up that way. But now there's lots of tablets. You don't have to sign up with a credit card. And what they did is they bought everyone a Nook at that time. It was experimental. They were all under $100, about $80 or so. They were able to put them all on there. They use them as a communication device. They use them as a reference device. They were able to provide curriculum to everyone. They gave them to them when the program was done. And they came out ahead doing this. And in addition to that, they were able to keep in better touch with their students and old students because they had set up, of course, their emails and their social media programs all on these tablets. So it really has worked out well. And some of the other grantees are starting to either do both or incorporate it into their programs. Some are kind of using tablets, and then because now you can get them for less than $100, and some are using them in combination with hard copy. But we'll see what information we can get for you on that. Any other things before we sign off? Okay, well, we're going to reconvene again in 2 weeks, and we'll be talking to you all on October 21st.
Okay,
thank you, Michael.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, thank you. Have a great one.